Greetings, everyone. It's good to see you or feel you in this space as we've been practicing together. And I want to start the reflections in this moment with a note of gratitude that came up for me this afternoon and just wanted to share with you. I found myself with a sense of overwhelming gratitude for this practice, just as a practitioner. As first and foremost, I'm a practitioner. And just so much gratitude for this, for these tools, for these practices, for this training. I want to call it training. I was just struck. I was struck today by the power, by the power, by the beauty, by the just the goodness of these practices. So, and just such a privilege to be able to practice together in this field, in Sangha, the goodness of the Buddha, the sense of confidence and practicing in oneself, the Dharma, these teachings, and the Sangha. So the triple jewel, I was struck by the triple jewel this afternoon, so much gratitude for it. So I wanted to bring that in and start with that. That's what's really alive for me right now. So this practice and this retreat, teachings on metta and wisdom, love and wisdom, as we have interwoven, and I've so appreciated the teachings of Sayadaw Ujjagar. I'm just so delighted in all the teachings that are shared. I think there are enough teachings shared for a lifetime to practice in this retreat, but we'll continue. We'll continue. Yeah, the beautiful interweaving of wisdom practices and wisdom teachings and metta teachings and practices really together, not separable. So as now with these concentric circles, as we're doing that too, we're kind of exploring our way, expanding our heart gently, or inviting when it's appropriate in these categories, and having moved to the category of the person we are having challenges with, or the person we are entangled with, which is a mouthful. And as pointed out, we try to avoid the traditional phrase enemy or a difficult person, because they're not difficult as far as they're concerned. We're the ones who are difficult. Right? So it's just the person we're having difficulty with right now. Might be different in the future, might have been different in the past. It's just these are the conditions right now. And as many of you have also noted in the practice meetings, which have been so rich, really so rich, with the wholeheartedness of your practice and sharing, just so beautiful. Many of you have noted that, oh, these categories keep shifting. You know, for example, my benefactors, now the person I'm having challenges with, or the person I was having challenges with is now my benefactor, or my neutral person is no longer neutral anymore. It's like a dear person. It's just, you know, these categories. And then another observation that many of you have made is, I find these categories all in myself. I am both my own benefactor, person who takes care of me, wants the best for me, loves me, and the person who's sometimes neutral and is kind of who I feel disconnected from. And who is this person here? And also the person who is, boom, I have a lot of difficulties with. It's my most difficult person right here. So That's all natural. It's all part of this practice. It's all our perception, all these changing perceptions. So really, these concentric circles, these categories also help us get a sense of they also lead to wisdom teachings, because wisdom teachings tell you that your perception, sanya, perception, the way you perceive things, categories, are all impermanent. They're movable. They're not fixed. It's not, but impermanent, anicca. And oh, do we get to see that with this practice? Do we get to experience the wisdom of this changing perceptions? And also sometimes, also something that has come up in the meetings and around this time of a retreat, when we turn our heart's attentions to the person we are entangled with, especially if that person is ourselves, what comes up is forgiveness. Forgiving ourselves, forgiving others. So today I want to say a few words about forgiveness in this talk, share some reflections. That's what's on the agenda. So just to let you know. I'm going to say a couple more words about, before I get to specifically to forgiveness, in that neighborhood regarding harm. So this idea of doing metta, cultivating metta, cultivating goodwill for a person we're entangled with, we have challenges with, is not about condoning harm that has been done. So harm may have been done. They might have actually harmed us, and we might actually have harmed them. So it's not about condoning the harm and just pushing it aside. It's not about that. But it's about seeing their humanity, not denying their humanity. It's not dehumanizing and just reducing the entirety of this human being to this act, to this harmful, painful, difficult act. So seeing their humanity and still not condoning the harm. So this idea that we've brought in, and I want to reiterate, this practicing metta and love for ourselves and others, it doesn't mean that we condone harm. It actually, there is a fierceness, there is a strength, there is a power in metta, in love. It's not, you can walk all over me, it's okay, you've hurt me before, you can hurt me again. None of that. There is a sense of strength, power, that we love ourselves, we love the other person so much, we don't let harm to happen. And I know I've said this before, but this is so important to really bring in, especially about this category of people we have challenges with. And as Bhante also brought up, there's a sense of protection, protecting ourselves. Maybe we wish the person who has harmed us, wish them well. May they be happy. May they be happy, really without any ill will. And we realize that actually there can be, if we get together again, there will be harm. It's challenging. So maybe the best thing we can do for them and us is to love them from afar. That's the best way that we can actually have the best way this relationship can work. So, the the teachings on resentment also that Bhante brought in today, beautiful teachings on how to remove resentment, the 10 ways from the Visuddhimagga, which I love. And I love the last one, I have to say. When I was first reading, studying that teaching, when I got to number 10, give the person the gift, interesting. And I'm trying to remember, I've definitely tried it actually to give people I was entangled with. And there's something that opens in your heart. It's about generosity. It's about with opening to metta, letting go of resentment is an act of generosity. So when you give someone a gift, you're opening your own heart up. It's not so much that they will like you and, you know, they might be surprised and the dynamics might shift, of course, but it's really about releasing the resentment by opening up to some generosity, by this letting go, this act of letting go. And another thing to say about resentment is anger that has just become a habitual pattern, And the two are actually a little different. So anger in and of itself, there can be helpful information in just anger that arises. Sometimes there is a moral transgression that might have happened. And that anger signals that, oh, something isn't right. Something needs to be done. So it can lead to right action, to wholesome action. So anger actually can be very clean. It can be very clean, felt, expressed, and then let go of. Done, finished. There was a signal, move through. But when it becomes habitual, when it becomes repetitive, it becomes corrosive for our psyche, it becomes a pattern of the heart and mind. And it builds into, becomes resentment. And of course, the simile of a hot coal is a good one that many of you might have heard, which is that kind of anger and resentment is like picking up a hot coal to throw at someone. And guess who gets hurt first? You get hurt yourself because you're picking it up. So forgiveness, turning to forgiveness. So with those preparatory remarks, so some of what I'll share is just to give credit is from an article from the Greater Good Science Center on forgiveness. So the psychological aspects of forgiveness that I will discuss, it's from there. The Buddhist aspects are from here, from the canon. So one thing to say about forgiveness in Buddhism, you know, the Dalai Lama, in the Tibetan tradition, he talks about it a lot, about forgiveness. And in fact, in the book, his book with Desmond Tutu, The Eight Pillars of Joy, the name of the book is The Book of Joy. And in The Book of Joy, which is a lovely book, highly recommended. It just makes you happy to read and practice it. And I've covered it actually piece by piece, all the practices in all the pillars in Happy Hour some time ago, so it's all on audio drama if you're ever inclined. So forgiveness is a part of Buddhist practice, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama says compassion and forgiveness, these are the real ultimate sources of power for peace and success in life. It's interesting. Again, he's talking about the sense of power. There's something powerful about these. These are not weak. These are not weak emotions. These are not weak powers. These are actually quite powerful. So that we're not caught, we're not stuck in one way of being, stuck in resentment. So, and yet, there isn't a, you know, forgiveness sutta per se, because it's everywhere. It's like what I was describing with the, with metta being the wood that's in all the three aspects of the path. It's just, it's everywhere. So forgiveness really is metta and letting go, and this aspect of letting go when you see impermanence, when you open your heart to let go, you're letting go of resentment with care. You're cultivating care. You're cultivating goodness. You're cultivating friendliness, love for yourself and for others, including those you have difficulty with. So forgiveness is kind of in there already. It's the practices are in there. They come up as they have already come up for you, as you've talked about them in practice meetings, practicing with the person you're having challenges with. So it is part of the canon. And in some ways, the way they're talked about in theistic religions, in Christianity, it may sound a little different, because there's the idea of grace and the grace of God, or in Islam, which is the religion I grew up in, God as the merciful, the beneficent. In fact, every surah of every, like the equivalent of sutta in the Quran, every surah in the Quran starts with, in the name of God, the merciful, the forgiving, the merciful. So there is this idea of, that's the most salient feature in some ways that we associate with divinity in theistic religions, that aspect of grace. And here in Buddhism, I have to say, the more I practice, I'll speak personally, and also having heard of others, the more I practice, I feel there is, you know, this idea of forgiveness and me forgiving you, you forgiving me. It's when the boundaries drop, there's a sense of this, you know, as we've been talking about, when everything drops, when in the space of emptiness, when emptiness arises, there's only love. So there is this sense of grace. There is sense of grace all around, beneficence all around. So for me, they've just kind of merged. It just doesn't seem like there's such a difference of, this is the way they talk about it, this is the way we talk about it. It seems more... Anyways, from personal experience, you see for yourself, practice for yourself, see what comes up for you. Don't take my word for it. See what comes up for you. So a few notes. So psychologists, now here's some things from Greater Good Science Center. So psychologists generally defined forgiveness as a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance towards a person or group who has harmed you, regardless of whether they actually deserve it or not. And that's a key. That is a key. So forgiveness is offered regardless of whether they've asked for it, whether it's deserved. It's we're releasing our own heart from bondage. So that's why I was at the beginning, I was saying separating the harm done from the metta, or this act of forgiveness. So the idea here is that one doesn't gloss over or deny the seriousness of the offense. And it's not about condoning, forgetting, or excusing the offense. But it's about offering, is releasing the contraction, the pain, the anger, the resentment around that. And also, there is no obligation. There is no obligation to reconcile or to release them from legal accountability. So it's different. It's very nuanced. It's very nuanced. Instead, forgiveness brings the forgiver the peace of mind and frees them from corrosive anger and corrosive resentment, actually, when it just keeps going on and on. And when we are in prison, when we are prison, we just go over what happened over and 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 over again. So psychologists debate whether true forgiveness requires positive feelings towards the offender or not. I think as far as Buddhists are concerned, I think that will arise. I think when one does the practice of metta for the person whom you're having challenges with, the sense of kind regards for their humanity does arise. So let them debate. And on this end, I think experientially, that's the sense that comes up, a sense of regard for their humanity, warmth and care for their humanity. And of course, as mentioned earlier, the relationship might continue, the relationship may not continue, depending on what the setup is and what's really best for everyone involved, with best the best of intentions with metta. So in a way, this forgiveness empowers one to recognize the pain that one has suffered without letting the pain define you, without being defined by the pain, and enabling one to heal and move forward with one's life. So I'll say it again, because I think this is really powerful, this aspect. It's really empowering, so that one recognizes the pain one has suffered without letting the pain define one. And enabling to heal, to let go in that way, and move on with one's life. So forgiveness could be private, could be for our benefit only. It doesn't necessarily mean reconciling with the person at all. And again, it can be offered whether or not the person has asked for it or they quote unquote deserve it. It's offered for the freedom of our own heart, freedom of our own heart. Releasing anger and ill will. So forgiving ourselves, it can be often the hardest part of this path. And Maya Angelou has an interesting quote that I'd like to read for you. So she says, "I don't know if I continue even today always liking myself, but what I learned to do many years ago was to forgive myself. It is very important for every human being to forgive herself or himself or themselves, because if you live, you will make mistakes. It is inevitable. But once you do, and you see the mistake, then you forgive yourself and say, well, if I'd known better, I would have done better. That's all." So you say to people who you think you may have injured, "I'm sorry." And then you say to yourself, I'm sorry. If we all hold on to the mistakes, we can't see our own glory in the mirror because we have the mistake between our faces and the mirror. We can't see what we're capable of being. You can ask forgiveness of others, but in the end, the real forgiveness is in one's own self. I think that young men and women are so caught by the way they see themselves. Now, mind you, when a larger society sees them as unattractive, as threats, as too black or too white, or too poor or too fat or too thin or too sexual or too asexual, that's rough. But you can overcome that. The real difficulty is to overcome how you think about yourself. If we don't have that, we never grow. We never learn. And sure as hell, we should never teach. I love that quote. Maya Angelou, rest in peace, rest in power. I especially love the part that she talks about, if you don't forgive yourself, here it is, if we all hold on to the mistakes, we can't see our own glory in the mirror because we have the mistakes between our faces and the mirror. We can't see what we're capable of being. Whew. That's powerful and beautifully, poetically put. Between ourselves and the mirror, ourselves and our faces. So, there is this practice of naming the witnesser, simply acknowledging and holding witness to the harm, to what's happened, this process of naming, being witnessed, confessing, which Truth and Reconciliation councils in apartheid have used. And recently there's this book called A Good Apology by Molly. I'll remember the name by the end of it. I'll look it up. So and the idea being that, say, if sometimes both internally and also if there is this sense of feeling that harm has happened, when you, for example, reach out to someone, to just listen. And we've talked about holding witness, bearing witness with equanimity, just bearing witness instead of jumping in to apologize and try to make it better, but listening, just holding witness. And that's the part that requires this practice without becoming reactive. Let the person speak their part from their perspective. Let yourself have the equanimity with empathy, a sense of metta, of just hearing, letting yourself be affected. And this can both work both externally and internally. And for ourselves also, there's a sense of, it's a little harder perhaps to manage, but also letting the part that we have harmed, you know, forgiveness, there's so many dimensions of it. It can get a little confusing, you know, forgiving ourselves, forgiving others, asking for forgiveness from others. So there are different dimensions of this. So I've now switched, as you realize, to talking about the case of if we feel like we've harmed someone and we want to to ask for forgiveness or offer an apology. That person being external or internal. So the first step is just in asking them for, first of all, whether there is an opening, whether it's because they may not be ready, and we need to completely respect that. And we may not be ready, and to completely respect that. So forgiveness is very, very treated as a shy kitty, just very tenderly, gently. It can't be forced. It really can't be forced. So say inviting someone, and maybe this is an invitation in your heart while you're doing this practice. May not be in the real world. Of course, it could be in the real world, in daily life, or it could be in the practice of just bearing witness. And what if I were in that person's shoe and seeing their life operating in the world from that person's perspective, just holding witness. And let yourself be moved. Let yourself be moved. Not trying to move to make it better, but let yourself be moved and maybe offering or asking for forgiveness after there is a sense of having borne witness, allowing the other to name. And again, this could be internal. It could be in your own mind too. Because sometimes there can be a sense of just wanting to jump to reconciliation or to apology or to make it okay or make it go away. So taking some time internally and externally, when it's ready for it to be let go of. And internally too, in the same way as, for example, in the case of forgiving yourself or forgiving, offering forgiveness to others internally, even if you never reconcile with them, maybe the chance is gone. Maybe they're not living anymore. So it really is in your own heart. Being gentle, taking your time. Forgiveness can't be forced. It can't be forced. I'll say that again and again. When I am ready, when you are ready, just inclining the mind towards letting go of this resentment, this hurt, inclining the mind and letting it take its own time. So what blocks forgiveness? One thing that can feel, it can forgiveness, the idea of it can feel like betraying or dismissing or condoning. So see the associations, because they can be separate. It does not mean dismissing. It does not mean condoning. We're talking about the freedom of one's own heart. Freedom of one's own heart without condoning the harm. Freedom from the memory, from the prison of hurt and resentment, so that one can move on with one's life. So bring wise investigation to how these might be conflated, Another thing that blocks it, as I was mentioning earlier, is unreadiness, just simply not being ready, not there being the readiness, the conditions, the conducive supportive conditions for the heart. And if it's not ready yet, your heart isn't ready yet, and it's okay, it can't be forced. Something else I can. But and yet with unreadiness, to plant the seed, to plant the seed. May I be ready someday? I wish I'll be ready someday without forcing it now. So inclining the intention in that direction ever so gently. Another block to forgiveness is self-protection. Self-protection is one when one perceives the self. It's the sense that, oh, if I forgive them, then they'll hurt me again. There's a sense of boundaries. So again, as I mentioned before, they don't necessarily mean the same thing. There can still be the boundaries, and there can be the sense of forgiveness. It's okay. It's released. It's done. It's gone. So separating those from one another. And another one is sometimes what comes up is saving face in front of the others. When the sense of self is dependent on others' opinions, that, oh, if I forgive this person, they'll think I'm weak or I'm this. Actually, it's a sign of strength. It's a sign of power to let go of resentment. As Mahatma Gandhi has said, the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. I love that. The weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. Powerful words from a powerful being. Lily Tomlin puts it well. She says, forgiveness means giving up all hope for a better past. Giving up all hope for a better past. And one more quote from Paul Boies. Forgiveness does not change the past, but it does enlarge the future. It does enlarge the future. And also to say that forgiveness for ourselves, for others, as a practice of the heart, it may not be a one-shot deal. You may forgive a little bit and may go through it again and again and again. The parts that are left. So don't be disappointed feeling, oh, I felt I forgive myself. And how here I'm feeling, oh, there's some resentment again left. It's okay. It's okay. Trust that it's not a circle, but a spiral. So you're not in the same location where you were before, but actually you've gone deeper. You've gone deeper. You've gone deeper. Keep going deeper. So trying to decide which way to go next. I have more things to say about forgiveness. Maybe I wanted to say some things about self-compassion. Decisions. Well, let me pause for a moment. So, you know, I wonder why not this. Okay, so I'm going to ask. Oh, wait. Oh, that's not available. Never mind. Is the yes and no isn't available here in this room. I was going to ask for people to vote, but it's not available. So, oh, well, that would have been fun. A talk by vote, by proxy. You could have voted which topic you want to hear for the remaining time. Well, I can do an informal, as I know that only there's some of you I can see on the screen, not everyone. So all right, well, I'll still take a poll, but all right. So so let me give you the two options. So one option is there are some specific invitations for how, and this is actually passing on some teachings from Jack Kornfield about forgiveness, the particular steps that he recommends. So that's option one. And I'll ask you for your vote in a moment. Hold on. And then the other is to ask about, to talk about self-compassion and some hindrances to self-compassion. That's option two. Okay, so option one, if you'd like to hear about more about self-compassion, about forgiveness and specific direct invitations for that, raise your hand and keep it up so I can get a sense of how many. Okay, see, one, two, three. Oh, this is hard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's go to the other page. 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, great. Fantastic. All right. So now for the second option, self-compassion and what blocks it. Okay, I think there are a lot more people raising their hand for that. I love it. I love it. Oh my God. This is so fun, you know, isn't it? You can still have a sense of community and decide together democratically what we want to hear about on Zoom, even though we're all in separate places in the world and our time zone. It's just, my heart is just lifted with joy, with the sense of connection, co-creation in the community. Okay. All right. Self-compassion has it. So, all right. So let me pull up that section. All right. So in the time that's left, I want to say a few words now. By invitation, it's actually sweet. It reminds me of what DeBonte was saying. You know, there's this procedure of you have to ask monastics to give a talk. Please, Bonte, give a talk, and he was giving. So basically, now you just asked me to talk about self-compassion. Yay! I get to talk about self-compassion. This is great. So here we go. So fears of compassion. Yeah. So fears of compassion. Fears of compassion in general, and then fears of self-compassion. So fears of compassion in general, and which are similar to fears of metta, is this idea that, you know, we become a doormat. We become a doormat, as I've mentioned. We fear that we might become too nice. And another aspect is that we're going to let ourselves off the hook. So I'll talk about letting ourselves off the hook in a moment, because that's more about self-compassion. So I talk about compassion in general, and then a little more about fears of self-compassion. So fears of compassion, again, it's not idiot compassion. When we have sense of wisdom in compassion, as we keep talking about in compassion and metta, if there's a sense of wisdom in it, the only thing we're losing is really the reactivity and not being caught. So I love the story, which many of you might have heard, that Sharon Salzberg tells about when she was in Bodh Gaya years ago in India. And she gets on a rickshaw with a friend, and the rickshaw is being pulled in these different streets in Calcutta. And the way she tells the story, and I think this is her most told story perhaps, is that a man starts, the rickshaw starts running down the back streets and the alleys. And then an extremely drunken man comes out of the shadows and grabs the driver and makes him stop. And then starts to pull Sharon off the rickshaw. And Sharon is really frightened and scared, rightfully, and not knowing what's happening. She's being pulled off an unknown city. And basically the friend manages to shove the man away and get the rickshaw driver to start running again. And Sharon is quite shaken, and they're actually going to see her teacher Munindra. And when they get to Munindraji and tell Munindraji of what happened, Munindraji says, "Oh, Sharon, with all the loving kindness in your heart, should have taken your umbrella and hit that man over the head with it." I love that story. It's so telling. It's so telling. Teaching from Munindraji, is that compassion, love, isn't weak. It can has wisdom in it. You take with all the love in your heart, you take your umbrella and you hit that man. It's not out of hatred, it's out of love. Like, don't hurt me. You're hurting yourself. You're hurting me out of love for both of us. So that for me is such an image that I keep in my mind. It's a sense of I look out of love. It's not out of hatred. That's what I want to emphasize. So love, compassion does not make us weak. It's not supposed to make us weak. It's supposed to actually give us more strength. And out of love, love is strong. Love is strong. There's a strength in love for ourselves and others. So with the concerns about, oh, we'll let ourselves off the hook if we become too compassionate. We'll let ourselves off the hook. If we're becoming too kind to ourselves, we'll never get anything done. And we'll just become a couch potato, and just nothing ever will happen. Fears of compassion, fears of metta. So it turns out that actually it's the other way around. If we have more compassion, more metta, I'm mixing the two terms here, but I'm using them a little interchangeably. Well, actually, both of them, because a lot of times when we turn to ourselves, we're turning to our own suffering and whole. So metta becomes compassion. So self-care, self-love, let's just call it self-love. So couple of studies I want to share with you. One is that there's one study supporting that self-compassion, actually self-love, leads to taking more, not less, responsibility for our actions. So there is this study that happened that was done by Brins and Chen, UC Berkeley, where they asked a group of subjects to think about a recent moral transgression that they had regretted and they felt guilty about. So one group of participants was told to write something kind and understanding about what happened, about this moral transgression that they felt bad about. Another person, another group of subjects were simply told to write about their favorite hobbies. So that's the control group. So guess what happened? So the group that was instructed to be more self-compassionate, to be more understanding and kind, they were actually much more motivated to repair any harm that was caused by the transgression, and they committed not to repeat the mistake. Than the other, actually, I missed another control group. Than the other two, another control group was they were told to simply think about their positive qualities. So those were the two control groups: positive qualities, favorite hobbies, and then kind and understanding. So the love, the compassion. So this one group is significantly more responsible, taking more responsibility, more motivated to repair the harm. And then another study. Also, where participants were instructed to to be more self-compassionate, to be self-compassionate when thinking about a past mistake, failure, humiliation. And they also, in this other study, they were more likely to accept personal responsibility for what happened rather than blaming things on outside people or events. So it makes sense. It actually, this really makes sense, because if there is no sense, there's no kindness, there's no love and acceptance internally, what arises, there is a sense of guilt and shame, not remorse. Remorse is wholesome, because when there is remorse, you're moved to make amends and shift things in the world. But the sense of just shame, there's, you know, I'm so bad, I'm terrible. Like there's, when there's no kindness, cushion of kindness to hold it, it just becomes shame. So, and shame feels so bad. It's so, such negative emotions about person's own worth that you want to say, well, it's their fault. It's not my fault. You don't want to feel the shame, right? Because it feels so bad. You want to say, it's their fault. It's their fault. They did that. They did that, right? So you point externally. But whereas when there is self-compassion, self-care, it's like, oh, sweetie, yes, 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 you screwed up and I still love you. You're still worthy. You're still worthy of care, of love, of compassion. And yes, you made a mistake. Everybody makes a mistake. That was not a good idea. Let's fix that. Let's never do that again. You see how that's different. One doesn't need to point externally to the outside. One can take responsibility, more responsibility. One doesn't become a couch potato and do all terrible things in the world. Actually, one takes more responsibility for one's shortcomings and is more motivated, as these studies suggest, to actually not repeat them, do differently instead of pointing outside. Does this make sense? Nod your head if this makes sense. To me, this makes so much sense. Yes, thank you for your nod. Yes, I appreciate your affirmation. When I saw these studies, the light bulb went off for me. Of course it makes sense. Of course it makes sense. It's the other way around. It's the other way around. It doesn't make you off the hook. In fact, you become more responsible, more responsible. So, a couple of suggestions for now, self-compassion and self-forgiveness. I'll bring these two in. That again, with the cushion of self-care, of self-love, of self-metta, self-compassion, whatever you want to call it, whatever nuances come up for you, to let the sense of remorse be held with the common humanity, with the self-care, with the self-love, instead of falling into the shame, unworthiness. So one invitation there. And that allows one to accept one part, to accept one's part, not condone one's action, not point elsewhere, but forgive oneself, truly forgive oneself, truly forgive oneself, and also make amends, and also make amends. Make amends internally, externally. Because after all, we are just like anyone else. We make mistakes, and everybody else is just like me. It's this common humanity, common humanity. So I want to end with a poem by Fred Lamont. And the title of the poem is My Ancestry DNA Results Came In. My ancestry DNA results came in, especially for many of you who might have done these ancestry DNA results with, you know, you spit in a tube, you send it, a few weeks later, you get some like results anyway. So this is in that spirit. Here we go. Just as I suspected, my great-great-grandfather was a monarch butterfly. Much of who I am is still wriggling under a stone. I am part larva, but part hummingbird too. There is dinosaur tar in my bone marrow. My golden hair sprang out of a meadow in Palestine. Genghis Khan is my fourth cousin, but I didn't get his dimples. My loins are loaded with banyan seeds from Sri Lanka, but I descended from Ravana, not Ram. My uncle is a mastodon. There are traces of white people in my saliva. 3.7 billion years ago, I swirled in golden dust, dreaming of a planet overgrown with lingams and yonis. More recently, say 60,000 BC, I walked on hairy paws across a land bridge, joining Sweden to Botswana. I am the bastard of the sun and moon. I can no longer hide my heritage of raindrops and cougar scat. I am made of your grandmother's tears. You conquered rival tribesmen. You conquered rival tribesmen of your own color. Chain them together, march them naked to the coast, and sold them to colonials from Savannah. I was that brother you sold. I was the slave trader. I was the chain. Admit it, you have wings, vast and golden, like mine, like mine. You have sweat, black and salty, like mine, like mine. You have secrets silently singing in your blood, like mine, like mine. Don't pretend that Earth is not one family. Don't pretend we never hung from the same branch. Don't pretend we don't ripen on each other's breath. Don't pretend we didn't come here to forgive. Don't pretend we didn't come here to forgive. Let's just sit together in silence and let the words settle. Thank you for your kind attention and presence. I hope it was supportive. Anything that is useful, please let it settle. Anything that's not useful, let it go and forgive. Thank you.